David Veres. You're listening to the Nordic Podcast. Today's interview was made with Per Pippin Aspås, a Norwegian historian of sciences and academic librarian in the northernmost university city on the planet, Tromsø. We talked on Open Science Week 2019 in the Hungarian Academy of Sciences about, well, open science, the beginning of Finno-Ugristics, and how academic freedom can cure diseases. Let's talk about Maximilian Hell and János Sajnovic, since they are the reason why you're sitting here today. Who were they?
Well, they were, or they have become, national heroes of Hungary, and not only of Hungary, but also of other modern states in this region. They came from Central Europe, and they spent most of their careers here, but they made one excursion out to the far north, where I happen to live. They went all the way up to Vardø in far northern Norway to observe a transit of Venus. And it so happens that this was 250 years ago this year that they observed the transit of Venus in 1769 in Vardø. So to commemorate this, there is this conference going on here at the Hungarian Academy of Sciences today.
And they only stepped out one time from the, you know, from the empire?
Yes, but there are other ways of stepping out. You can also write letters. Today you would surf on the internet, but back in the day they wrote letters and they read books, of course, from several colleagues abroad. So they were very well connected, especially Maximilian Hell. It was part of his job to be well connected with other astronomers across Europe. He was the imperial and royal astronomer of Vienna, so he was something of a prominent figure on the European scene of science in the 18th century.
Yes, and they made some observations besides, you know, the passing of the Venus, like they met the Sami people?
Yes, they were interested in all different sorts of things. As was common during the century of enlightenment, you could be a professor of astronomy, but still you wrote books about history or about language or whatever, in addition to your core field of study. Hell was one of those polymaths, or Universalgelehrte, as they are called in German. So when he was invited to go to far northern Norway, he wanted to explore more than just the transit of Venus, which was taking place during one night for 6 hours. If he had cloudy weather, he would have seen nothing. So he couldn't depend on that much luck. So he decided to spend a lot of time in Vardø and make other investigations as well. He investigated wildlife, marine life. He took samples of the sea, and he measured meteorological phenomena. And he also had, for instance, the Aurora Borealis, or Northern Lights, as a specific topic that he studied quite comprehensively. But first and foremost, here in Hungary, these two Jesuits have become national heroes on account of their investigation of the Sami people, or the Lapps, as they were called back then. Because there were theories that there could be some sort of linguistic connection between Hungarian and several other languages that we nowadays call Finno-Ugrian languages, including Sami. But nobody had really proved it with sound methodology and with comprehensive studies. So while they were in Vardø, Sajnovic, whose mother tongue was Hungarian, started to study the books that existed on the Sami language, and also started to make interviews with native speakers. And from these interviews, he was able to make an elaborate demonstration that there was an affinity between Sami and Hungarian.
Yes. You work as a librarian as well, with a very keen interest in
open science, open access. This week is Open Access Week. So what is open access?
Open access means that the articles and books that people from the university and other scientists outside the university write should be available for the public on the internet for free. It's technically possible. Anybody can put anything online. But the habit is that we go to a journal or a book publisher and ask for them if they think our manuscript is worthy of being published or not. And then the publisher or journal editor sends it to some other scientists who read the paper, often anonymously, and say, this is good, this is a little bit blurry, it should be more precise language here and there. After that, it's fine, it can be published. So this is a good system to that you just don't put anything online, but some experts read it and make their opinion. But the habit has been for decades that the publishers of the journals and the books are often commercial agents. They need to earn money, and in the former times it was fine, because if I wrote a book in, let's say, 1970, when there was no internet, I needed to go to a publisher to actually make the content public, if you get what I mean. You had to print things, and you had to get things distributed physically. So then it made sense to have somebody outside of academia to take care of all that distribution and get things also set up in a proper manner so it could be printed and so on. Nowadays, anybody can actually put up a text and create a PDF. It will look more or less fine. So you don't need the publisher for the layout bit. You don't need the publisher for the printing, because most content is distributed online anyway. But the problem is that for the publishers to survive in a world without printing, where everything is online, they need to have paywalls. And these paywalls means that in order to read this article, you need to pay this and that amount of money and find your credit card, etc., as a private person. If you happen to be in the university, often the university library pays this for you, so you get access to it immediately. But it costs actually a lot of money that could have been spent on science instead. So that is the rationale behind open access. Most people say, okay, there is a job done by the commercial publishers, but we pay too much for it. And anyway, it shouldn't be behind a paywall. Anybody should be able to read what the public finances. The public money is spent on research, and the outcome of the research should be publicly available.
But if I'm not funded, my research is not funded by the people, then?
You can still send it to a journal and ask them to review it as an independent scholar. If you're so eager to have your thoughts and your findings spread, then it would make sense to have it online so that it was free for anybody to read, right, wouldn't it?
But, you know, how do you live?
Yeah, that is the downside of this. Nobody lives from writing articles for scientific journals. Nobody gets money for that. It's the journal publisher that gets the money. That is their rule. You can have popular magazines that are being sold at the newsagents, etc. There you can get some money. But for these specialized journal articles, you never get anything as an author. Well, it depends. You can perhaps write a bestseller in English, a book about history of science, for instance, as is my field. That can happen. That some individual scholars write books that sell a decent amount of copies so that they can live from it. But for a small country like Norway, and I believe also, without offending anybody, Hungarian also is a small language compared to English or German or French, then it's really hard to make money from writing books about very specific topics, for instance, in history. So there, it doesn't really make sense. Most authors live from stipends that they get from foundations or stipends from the state. So they're not they don't have much income from book sales anyway.
And if you don't have a stipend, I mean, you see the problem. You're a librarian. You must love books. You like to hold them in your hands. That costs money.
I think it makes sense to pay to have a hard copy of a book in your hand. That's fine. But does it really make sense that you have to pay a lot of money to just read something on the screen? Very often the price is the same.
Yes, that's true.
So you can have ebooks that cost 150 euros and the hard copy costs 150 euros.
Yes, and it's ridiculous. How can it be? I really don't understand the system, the rationale.
Well, I believe the rationale is that we're sort of living towards the end of the area of printing.
Yes.
I'm sorry to say it, but it seems so. So we have so much of our system, of the money system around publication is based on an age of printing.
Academic freedom. It's quite an issue today. What do you think about that?
I think it's a good thing. I think academic freedom can be connected to open science. I believe scholars and scientists should have freedom to pursue their interests, and they should not be afraid of offending whoever is ruling the country in which they live. Some thoughts can be provocative. They can be an offense for a politician or whoever, but that is part of life. With academic freedom, this can happen. What I think is very important is that you protect the opportunity for scholars to really pursue their interests, to go in depth and to engage in free discussion with other scholars, and to express themselves in articles, in books, in blog posts, or in Twitter, or on Facebook, wherever, freely. And this is particularly important in an age where fake news is a growing problem. Fake news and pseudoscience is growing. I have met scholars who say, I don't believe in open access, I don't believe in open science, I believe it's an infringement of my academic freedom. Nobody should impose me to put things in open access online. I want to use the old ways. I want to go to the old journals. I don't care how much it costs because it's small money anyway. Some people have this kind of attitude that it's an infringement of their academic freedom and they should be allowed to put their things behind paywall. I try to argue with them and say, hello, you're funded by the state. You're dependent on the public to support your existence. Why don't you give this back to the public? For two reasons. One is an ethical reason that you get money from somebody, then you should give it back. Sort of what comes out of your research, you should give away freely. That's the ethical part. But the other part is also ethical, and it has to do with our duty as citizens. We should not be confined within our own circles. The academics talk to each other conferences and don't engage with the general public. If we do that, if we only talk to each other and hide behind paywall and don't care about the public discourse, then fake news will continue growing, then pseudoscience will continue growing, because you don't have the quality control, good papers out there for anybody to read. So when people, for instance, says climate change is not happening, how can you claim such a thing? At least as a counterclaim, you should present what has been published in cutting-edge science, and that should be freely available in order to combat this thing, that this idea that climate change is not happening. And you, as a scholar who believe in, not just believe in it, but you have proof that climate change is happening. You have the data, you have the quality control peer-reviewed papers on it, then you should put those online. You should help those the public access the forefront of science. Other areas are really dangerous diseases like Ebola or the problem now that you have bacteria, for instance, tuberculosis bacteria that are resistant against antibiotics. There is this war between the bacteria that are resistant against antibiotics and the newest inventions from the pharmaceutical industry that can actually kill those bacteria anyway. So we risk now to have a new plague, which is tuberculosis coming back and killing people even here in Europe, because the hospitals have so many patients with bacteria that no medicine can kill. In this combat to find a solution to save to save our citizens from this disease, awful disease, then it would make sense that every paper was published open access, so that every medical doctor could see what's going on and find the best medicine instantly.
If it's available to them, that's another thing.
That's another thing. But the first thing, in order to have a demand for it, yeah, would be that you have knowledge that it exists. And that, I think, is an important duty for us who work in academic institutions, to bring our knowledge to the wider world, not just keep it among each other and think that the common people are not specialists, so they're not able to understand. Because after all, in every university, you have many PhDs that go out of the university afterwards. They don't get a job within the university, but they go out, become teachers, become medical doctors, they work in the public sector, in the private sector with innovations, etc. Why shouldn't they access the very best research that's published in their field? I think it's a good thing for society to develop in a good way. So this is an idea which has roots back to the Enlightenment, and I think it's something that we can just pick from the Enlightenment, bring into our modern world with the technology we now have at hand.
When you think of the future, are you hopeful?
No. So I try not to. I try to think of the small steps that every single person can do. I try to do my part, and I can't bear on my shoulders the weight of the world. I must try to do my part. And the good thing is that there are always others who feel and think the same, and we can support each other. But let's not become depressed. Let's not have this resignation mood spreading. I mean, in the end, we will all die. We will become old and die as individual persons. If the planet as such dies, and mankind dies, it's really sad. But after all, on an individual level, I have an obligation to try and do my part to have a good society and a good planet. And I can't really try to become a president or prime minister or anything. I can try to do what I can do best and find my little niche, my little thing I can do in my everyday life.
And what's your part?
Not much, I'm afraid. I try to support people, students, for instance, that come to the library and really have a strong interest in some topics. I try my very best to help them find the sources they need, the books they need, etc. And that's a very rewarding part of my job. I try to talk whenever I can about open access and about open research data, and tell my colleagues at the university in Tromsø to how they can put their things online in a good way, so that it's not only placed somewhere but also retrieved and found by others. So I try to give this sort of advice every single day in my job. And what else can I do?
You heard Per Pippin Aspås, historian of sciences and academic librarian. Thank you for listening to the Nordic Podcast. Please tune in next time as well.